I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that we in London, Ontario, live in a kind of ecclesiastical backwater. And there's all kinds of stuff going on in the church and the world about which at least I hear very little. And one of the most egregious gaps, I think, was the announcement by Francis before the first session of the Synod on the Family. Now, this is a year ago. That every bishop should canvass everybody in his diocese to find out what they thought the church should be doing on a number of neuralgic topics. People divorce, remarry, gay marriage, homosexuality in general. And I think very few bishops, at least in North America, followed through with that. So the Synod opened with a bunch of letters from the German and Swiss and probably the French bishops as well, maybe the Dutch bishops. And we were simply out in the dark. Okay, then the Pope put out a letter called Amoris Laetitia, the joy of love. And the National Catholic Reporter, which is the best Catholic newspaper in North America, because most diocesan newspapers are simply rags, you know. St. Philomena is having their pork barbecue next Thursday evening, you know, blah, blah, blah. Be sure to come and bring a napkin. And I mean, rubbish of that order. The NCR, which has been publishing, I've been reading it for over 50 years, is nothing like that. And so I was struck, I had worked up a sermon, but then I was struck by an editorial that they published in the most recent issue that I got. And I thought, this is far more important and far better than anything I can say to you. So if you'll indulge me, I'm going to read the editorial, which addresses the synod, synodical matters, and the Pope's response. Amoris Laetitia is a profound reflection on the reality of family life in contemporary society. And Pope Francis has said that the community should read the apostolic exhortation slowly and deliberately. That deliberation will play out in these pages over the next several weeks. So for now, we offer reflections on two points that are particularly noteworthy. Again, this is a response to that papal letter. First, we should note that Amoris Laetitia offers few concrete solutions to questions that challenge today's families. In fact, it warns against accepting easily obtained answers. Instead, Amoris Laetitia boldly challenges bishops and pastors, theologians, and lay leaders to seek answers together and among themselves in sincere dialogue. In this, the apostolic exhortation echoes Francis' opening statement for the 2014 Synod of Bishops on the Family. Amoris Laetitia is a challenge to parhesia, that wonderful word that Paul uses a great deal, which means that you can speak openly, freely, to the highest powers. Bold, fearless dialogue about the family. We urge all leaders in the Catholic Church to take this challenge seriously. With a few exceptions, the U.S. bishops, and no doubt bishops in other countries, miss the opportunity to fully engage all Catholics in their dioceses in the lead-up to the two synods of bishops on the family. Tools and encouragement were provided, and this newspaper reporting recorded great enthusiasm throughout the Catholic community to discuss the issues that impact family life. We recognize at that time an opportunity to set the larger community on fire. Too few dioceses tapped into this enthusiasm. With Amoris Laetitia, Francis has given the Catholic community a second chance. At a press conference April the 8th introducing the apostolic exhortation, Chicago Archbishop Blaise Cupich said that the doctrine should, quote, spark our imagination and ask where that might lead. quote again. Do we need to form teams that are going to help pastors reach out to people? Do we need to look for ways to enhance our marriage preparation programs? Is there a program we can put together for families who welcome that first child into the world? End of quote. We would answer Kupich with a resounding yes to these questions. The imaginations of Catholics have already been sparked, and with Amoris Laetitia, Francis is fanning that ember. We urge bishops and diocesan leaders not to lose this opportunity. Go out to the parishes and deaneries and consult widely. Because it is so accessible, Amoris Laetitia is the perfect tool to guide these local consultations. Amoris Laetitia calls for local community to seek pastoral programs appropriate to local churches and cultures. These consultations can become the seedbed of the parhesia that Francis is calling for. From these could spring the spirit of a new evangelization. At the same time, we urge Catholic laity and others to have patience with their bishops and diocesan leaders. They need time to study Amoris Laetitia fully and deeply. Give them that time. We don't have much choice, I don't think. Amoris Laetitia brings out of the shadows a language and style, a pastoral theology that has been much maligned in recent decades. Many in diocesan leadership will need to be reacquainted with this approach. If they are not convinced and conversant in this language and approach, then any consultation they call won't be worthy of the name. And we risk never bridging the divide between teachings and practice on issues like artificial contraception and irregular, to use the Vatican term, relationships. We have to give our leadership the time to get Amoris Laetitia right so that its importance isn't dismissed. This leads to our next point. After Amoris Laetitia, anyone who continues to insist that Francis is not bringing change to the Catholic Church either misunderstands the deeper message of this apostolic exhortation and the Francis pontificate, or is deliberately trying to mislead people. And there's plenty of that around. Those who have opposed Francis' reforms were immediately ready to discredit the apostolic exhortation. U.S. Cardinal Raymond Burke wrote that Amoris Laetitia is not an act of the magisterium, to quote him. It is, Burke said, a personal, that is, non-magisterial document, a reflection of the Holy Spirit, of the Holy Father. One wonders if Burke says the same of Pope John Paul's 1981 apostolic exhortation on the family, Familiaris Consortio, which was cited during the 2014 and 2015 synods of bishops as a kind of gold standard, the church thinking on the family. Other bishops pointed out in their statements about Amoris Laetitia that the document, in the words of Cardinal Donald Wuerl of Washington, who attended the synod in 2014 and 2015, reflects the consensus of those meetings and many voices. That's a quote from Wuerl. And it is, according to Kupich, who was appointed to the 2015 synod by Francis, quote, an authoritative teaching document that was faithful to what the bishops had approved with a two-thirds majority vote. Let us be clear. Amoris Laetitia will disappoint some, perhaps many, Catholics. It is tentative at best for Catholics who have divorced and remarried. It disrespects the family lives of our LGBT brothers and sisters, who've created, despite the opposition of many in our society and our church. We invite those who hope for more not to become discouraged, because if Amoris Laetitia isn't strictly revolutionary, it is certainly evolutionary. It does prod this pilgrim church, which has been in which has been, pardon me, sitting on the wayside for 35 years forward. With the Morrisley teaching, Francis continues to shift the structural authority in the church. Very important. He's been doing this from the time he was elected. His repeated message is, don't look to Rome and rule books for all the answers. Quote, not all discussions of doctrinal, moral, or pastoral issues need to be settled by interventions of the magisterium. End quote. That's from the Bishop of Rome, folks. Find answers that fit your traditions and your local situation. Quote the Pope, each country or region, moreover, can seek solutions better suited to its culture and sensitive to its traditions and local needs. End quote. Trust yourselves. Quote, the Spirit guides us toward the entire truth. End quote. Francis is again calling for an adult church. This is most clear in Francis' writing on conscience. Quote the Pope, we can add that individual conscience needs to be better incorporated into the church's praxis. That's a massive understatement, if you've ever heard one. We also find it hard to make room for this conscience of the faithful who are capable of carrying out their own discernment in complex situations. And finally, we've been called to form consciences, not to replace them. Francis, always the teacher, uses a Morrisley teaching to reflect on family life, but he also uses this apostolic exhortation to model how he wants the church to operate. Francis offers the Catholic community two challenges. To live as a community with parhesia, speaking and listening to one another with courage and humility, and then to translate the openness of papal actions and documents into pastoral discourse and compassionate action in their parishes. That's better than anything I could have said to you today. And I hope you take it to heart. In other words, Francis is, as usual, facing incommensurable opposition by all kinds of people. Raymond Burke, former Archbishop of St. Louis, former head of the highest court in the Vatican, whom Francis reappointed to be chaplain of the Knights of Malta, thank God, has written a whole book opposing the Pope. The Pope is complaining about the ultra-centralization of the Roman Church, something which everybody in this room, I suppose, is vaguely aware, at least. Not everything or very few things have to come floating down from the top. And we simply neglect our own integrity and our consciences by supinely waiting for Big Daddy to tell us what to think and how to behave.